As we continue to track this bizarre story of the Malaysian Airlines Flight 370, which has just simply disappeared, Jim Sanders is going to stay with us this hour, of course. He's the author of The Downing of TWA Flight 800. I remember the case, and I mean, to me, Jim is truly a patriot. He got into a real mess when he picked up some residue from the part of the plane, testing for the possibility of explosives, and he had quite a battle there. We'll talk with him a little bit about that, too. But let's get right into this when we come back, and we'll take your phone calls. What a story. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. James, thanks for coming back. We're going to take phone calls with you this hour about this truly bizarre story. I've got to tell you, James, the more I get into it, the stranger it seems. It really does.
Yes, it really does. That's why I started paying attention to it today, and I'm trying to get a manuscript, first draft done by the end of the month. And so that this was getting in my way, but I decided I at least better look at the AP, Reuters, and that kind of thing, see what was going on. And boy, there it was. You know.
James, here's something that really, you know, is puzzling as well. At any point, don't you think the pilots at least could have said, we've got a problem, we've been hit by something, or just something? There's been just nothing there.
It would have, if they weren't the ones that instigated it, it would have taken a real, real pro to make it happen. But anybody that's a real pro, you know, a real pro would know what they, the pilots, would try to do. And so, as I say, it would take a very professional job to keep that from happening.
What about the plane being taken over while it was in the air? Is that possible, like the 9/11 hijackers?
No, because then there would have been a signal put out. I mean, they have more than one way to let the world know that they're being taken over. So I don't see that. It would have had to been something, and as a for instance, and this has been put out there, somebody, there was apparently two young ladies who the co-pilot of this plane is alleged to have 2 years ago have opened the door for these two young ladies and let them in and take the entire trip with them, the pilot and the co-pilot, up in the cockpit. They would have taken that kind of thing, you know, a little bait there to get the door open, to keep it open, and to have people get inside there where the pilot's feeling comfortable. I have no idea if that's what happened, but it would take something like that if the pilots themselves weren't the ones responsible for this.
Man, have you ever in your history of research, especially the work you did with TWA Flight 800, seen one this bizarre?
No, not it'll be a few more days before I have to say that this is just incredible. But if they never publicly admit to finding the plane, then which I would assume meant they actually didn't find enough debris to declare it having been found, then to me things become quite clear. But other than that, I just going to have to hang here and see how this thing plays out. But there's no doubt in my mind that the best minds of the United States and probably of China, and again, I'd have to say Israel, but anyway, the best minds, foreign policy minds, have to be going over scenarios if they don't already know exactly what happened.
Yes.
It's very likely. Let's say if terrorists did take it over, real professional job, those radios, you can dial any frequency in the world just about on there. You know, not, you know, there's just the two or three frequencies or four that a plane would use as it was flying along or in a declared emergency. There's lots of other. I'm not even sure how many it is, but I assume it's in the hundreds by this time in history that they could have gone anywhere to communicate with wherever, you know, the other bad guys were and let them know that they were succeeding, you know, that kind of thing. And that certainly, NSA, I can't believe they wouldn't have gotten that quickly.
All right, let's go to Robert in Minneapolis to get things started here. Lots of people have their questions. Robert, welcome to the program. You are on the air, and Danny, you're going to have to click him in because our program is not working. Go Go ahead, Robert.
Hey, George. Yeah, hey, George. This is Robert from Minneapolis. I just wanted to say, I don't know if you're a fan of Hawaii 5-0, but there was a recent episode on there where some little boy had a laptop computer and he hacked into the systems of an airliner that left out of Hawaii going to the mainland, and supposedly this boy had control of the aircraft. I don't know. I heard of a rumor that possibly this could have happened in this case with the Malaysia 370. Do you, your guests think of anything like that or heard of anything about that?
What do you think, James?
I just earlier today read the, was it FAA or NTSB? I forget. Anyway, I went over and found there was a bulletin put out on the 777 in particular that a year or more back, they had to quickly make some fixes in the electronic system because people could tamper with the planes. They weren't real specific about exactly how they could tamper with it, but at least theoretically, from what the bulletin said, you know, as I was reading it, I said, wow, this would make a good movie script. You know, I didn't know that Hawaii 5-0 or somebody had already done a script off of it.
Yeah, it was just surprising me because my dad's actually a pilot for Delta, so yeah. I know a little bit about it, but I know that they said that the Boeing 777 has only one system, or that particular aircraft only had one system that was connected to both the cabin computers and the main cockpit computer, because I know there's a little screen in your headset that you can touch and say, oh, this is where you are, the GPS, whatever, that's when the transponder is active, correct?
Right, right. And
it's just kind of weird, you know, nowadays where you can access the different frequencies from a computer or cell phone or smartphone or whatever.
Yeah, the time frame in which that had to be fixed, and you know, assuming they got a decent fix, you wouldn't think that that could happen. And it certainly didn't say in the bulletin that could happen, but it didn't say it couldn't. So it was one of those things that it was so vaguely worded. I mean, you knew exactly what you had to fix, but you weren't quite sure from the bulletin itself why. You kind of generally knew, but not specifically. It didn't said, you know, say anything to the effect that somebody could take control of the plane. But you know, there are some very good people out there, you know, the hackers. So you know, anything's possible, I guess.
James, what about the supernatural? The possibilities. I've had some people say, look, you know, as we talked earlier, phones are ringing. Maybe they went through some kind of portal of some type. I guess at this point we can't rule anything out, can we?
No, it's several days too early. You know, I was strictly, you know, speculating on what I very strongly suspect is a fact, and that's what the head of the Malaysian Air Force said, that was backed up by a senior military member, and 10 hours later, probably with guns held to their head, you know, it was retracted when Malaysia clearly has told the players of the world, the foreign policy players, that they're going to be a player too. So that's, you know, after that, it's going to be at least days before I think you can further speculate on what's going on. Because there's one thing for certain, the facts absolutely will never be, there may be a reality set of facts, but actual facts, I am quite certain, will never come out of this one.
Let's go to Ron in Richlands, North Carolina. Hey, Ron, go ahead. You're on with James Sanders.
Good evening. Thanks for having me. Wanted to know was, are there any other instances of planes disappearing in that area? And the most important question, how much fuel would allow the plane to travel once it disappeared? Like, how far could it have went once it disappeared?
Okay, two questions there. One, in terms of the fuel, if it was fully loaded, that type of plane, and I'm not sure that's the long-distance version or not, it's the 200, and I didn't look up to see its range, but those planes, I mean, these are the planes that will take you from San Francisco, as a, for instance, to Australia, you know, pushing 11 hours in flight. So yeah. If this is an extended version, then it's half the world. If not, you know, minus a couple thousand miles, it'll go many, many thousands of miles. And the other was, have there been any other disappearances in that area? Yes, there was another one. I don't think there have been any where they didn't eventually find something, but I haven't really thoroughly investigated that. I did come across one that was somewhere within the last 20 years that may have not been found for a good long period of time.
You know, some people say, you know, like the Bermuda Triangle off of Florida, that there could be another kind of place like that in that region as well. Have we had any disappearances of ships or anything, James, in that area?
Well, you know, that's an area that the pirates work out of, not too far from there, and maybe even that far down. I'm not sure. But so, you know, that's I'm really not certain. I don't know specifically of any. And if ships did disappear, you know, with all the activity between the pirates and the military and everything else that's down there, I can't tell you. I don't know if there's a Bermuda Triangle type thing in there or not.
Let's go to Michael in Detroit, Michigan, east of the Rockies. Michael, go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you doing?
Good, Michael. Thank you.
Let me tell you something. You are brilliant. If it wasn't for your broadcasting, I wouldn't have thought of this. I know how to get to the plane.
What
and
happened?
Your whole listening audience, call the newspapers and tell the telephone companies to reverse ping the cell phone. The cell phone will tell where the GPS is, and it'll say, here we are. Or it will at least tell you where the tower, where the transmitter is going. If it wasn't for you telling me that they could make a phone call and it didn't go through, at least you connect the phone. Now you know the GPS version. They can track it.
I love good idea. I got to believe, James, that if that Wall Street Journal report was correct, that phones were ringing, as strange as it may seem, I would think that they have already tried to do that, don't you?
I'm sure that they're on top of that game. If they're not, then we just disband the NSA. Yeah, I'm positive that would have been done early. And if they found any info on it, yeah, you'd never know about it, of course. There'd be no reason to tell the public.
I mean, there's, you know, knowing what I know about smartphones and cell phones, I mean, if the phone is on, it will ring and then eventually go to voicemail. But if the phone is dead, if the battery's gone, if it's not on, it'll go straight to voicemail. It won't have a ringing sound to it, which everybody seems to be reporting when they call their family or friends.
Right. And there's one other thing that popped up because, you know, I don't have anything else to add on that because I'm not an electronic wizard. But an outfit called Digital Globe, it's online, you know, www.digitalglobe.com. They collect virtually all available satellite imagery, you know, that's not coded from around the world. And you can get at it anytime you want, going over to their site, and they put out a, I guess you'd call it a plea to the public to come and start grabbing off. I guess the ocean in that area is divided up into, you know, you get your little square, mm-hmm. and you can magnify it and search in detail, apparently right down to the wave level. And they were asking for the public to come in and grab their little square and see if they could find anything that looked like debris to give back to them so they could, you know, professionals would then look at it. But then so many people tried to do it that the site crashed. But if they can do it, then obviously the governments are doing that as well.
Now, this was in the wee hours, so it was dark. But I'm wondering if they would have had satellite photography of that region kind of looking down on the plane, and they might be able to spot where it went that way. Is that possible, or was it just too dark?
You know, I don't know. I did see a report where China moved 10 of its satellites into that area to, you know, start searching. But what they can see at night, I don't know. I really don't. But now, one thing I do know is that if the plane had exploded, they've already checked that because there is satellite imagery where if there was any kind of an explosion or presumably a missile, you know, exploding and hitting the plane or the plane burning or anything that created heat, they could pick that up, and they haven't been able to find anything there.
Was there any significance, James, to the two phony passport folks who got on?
Boy, I don't know. The younger one, they have the mother, you know, and who knows, you know, what mother knows what their 19-year-old kid really is doing. Interpol coming out and say, well, you know, we've looked at our records and we think the probability of a terrorist attack is quite remote now that we've been able to eliminate him. Well, you can't eliminate him. He may have just not shown up in your files. I thought that was a pretty stupid and telling thing. You know, it's in the, okay, this is probably the way we're going to go, so, you know, we'll get on board with the world here and we'll put out these soothing pieces of nonsense. You know, it's just not something the Interpol had any business saying. That's all I know about that, you know.
Let's go west. Joy is in Costa Mesa, California. Joy, thanks for calling. You are on the air with us. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to ask all of the people who know how to do remote viewing and all psychics to do their best to try to find the plane and the people as a public service.
Well, you know what? That's something we should ask Ed Dames and group to do as just a project. Just, hey, anything will help. Remote viewers, part of a past government program, James. So these guys know, they know what they're doing. I guess that won't hurt. That won't hurt at all. What about the possibilities? If this plane was hijacked but taken, where could they have landed a Boeing 777, a plane that big? Can't be on a small little dirt airfield. It's got to be on in some airport somewhere, right?
Yeah, you would think so. I guess there are parts of the desert out there that if they knew in advance that they were going to be landing a heavy plane, they'd know, you know, they'd have to be smart enough to get somebody to do some calculations. But in all probability, a plane like that, if they ever wanted to use it again, it'd have to come into an airport. And you do have to look and say, well, you know, not too far up the road to Iran. But, you know, that's, I have no clue on that one. But that would be really a speculative guess. But it is just up the road from where that plane seemed to be heading at a very low altitude.
Here's the other strange part. Terrorists want publicity.
Right.
Whether they are tweeting it now or putting it, you know, all over the place, they want the world to know that they did this. They've been very silent in this situation. Nobody's come forward yet. They haven't said what they did. They haven't said they blew up a plane. I find that unusual, don't you?
In terms of if it was just going to be the taking of the plane, yeah. There's two probabilities that kind of speak to that, and one is if it was going to be used as a kind of a 9/11 thing, somewhere within flight distance of that plane, they intended to crash it into something, which would, of course, give our team, if they were good analysts and good spies, and had some hint it was going down, they would just take the thing out so we didn't have another 9/11. Or, you know, quite obviously, if it was a terrorist thing, there was another mission involved. It could have been taking out somebody on the plane. If it wasn't, it wasn't a 9/11 or taking somebody out of the plane off, you know, just taking them out,
right?
Killing them. Then there is no reasonable, rational explanation for this having anything to do with terrorism.
No, there really isn't. And to date, nobody has said anything about anybody specifically prominent on this plane, have they?
No, not prominent, but they don't have to be prominent. They just have to be something that somebody with the ability to do the dirty deed needed to take them out. I mean, it could be somebody with knowledge.
Could be a businessman that they wanted a hit on or something, right?
Yeah, there's a vast, you can speculate on that for days, actually, and the type of person that could have been on that plane that isn't known. Intelligence would eventually figure that one out if they haven't already.
We're going to come back with you, James. We're going to take some final calls, and of course, you know, we have to also think about the possibility that it was in the luggage. And there was no suicide bomber, that maybe it was set up in the luggage. We'll be back in a moment. Hey, thank you to those of you who have been watching our television program, Beyond Belief. Last week was a record week. I really appreciate that. If you'd like to look at it for free for 10 days, simply go to beyondbelief.com and sign up for that. And you can also look at all the other available videos that are there during that 10-day period. beyondbelief.com. Welcome back to Coast, James Sanders with us. James, back in 1964, there was a movie called Fate is the Hunter, and it starred Glenn Ford, and it had to do with, of course, the possibility that a plane that went down was done by pilot error. And Glenn Ford, of course, the investigator, did not believe it, and he ended up investigating it and found out a spilled coffee cup that went into the equipment is what caused that plane to go down. What has happened to the beacons? I mean, it seems like everything is going wrong on this plane and this investigation. What about the beacons that are supposed to be so fail-safe? They're not emitting the sounds that they should be.
Well, we don't know that. Ships have to drag their sonar equipment. To the best of my knowledge, you can't hear them from the air, but I may be wrong on that. There may be technology that wasn't around in 1996 that they can use aircraft to do it. But from my knowledge, you know, ships have to drag their little sonar gizmos to search for it. But those things will go for a pretty long period
days.
Of time.
30 days, they say.
Yeah.
To me, that would be critical. If they can find that, that's probably where the plane is.
Yeah, you would think so. I will say this. Of all the aircraft accidents I've looked into, and, of course, TWA-800, it is the government with ease gets its own way in these investigations. The dominant media will not go, wait a minute, that's just not getting the job done. I mean, you can look at Egyptian Air, Swiss Air, American 587 is the most compelling case. It was 60 days after 9/11 out of JFK. I will flatly state that plane was brought down by a bomb inside the passenger cabin. There were witnesses almost in a complete 360-degree circle that will give you second-by-second detail on that happening. And yet the New York Times puts out an article right after it begging the government, if in fact it was a terrorist act, please don't tell us, it'll destroy our economy. And that was actually a very factual statement. New York, you know, all the airports would have had to close down. They would have done enormous damage, not just to that area, but to the entire United States economy.
What's the mindset, James, of these people who kill innocent people in planes or in cafeterias where they blow themselves up? What are they trying to prove?
Well, I try to put myself inside their brain, and what you seem to be looking at is people in very backwards societies that simply don't have the ability to go toe-to-toe with the United States military. And so they're using their own form of warfare against us.
Yeah, but in this particular case, you know, we only have four Americans on this plane.
Yeah, they don't. China, I think, had the most.
That's right.
Yeah, and so you would certainly, as an investigator, that would be your first area of focus, and not that unless those three Americans were some super important
people yeah.
either militarily, scientifically, or intelligence-wise. And I doubt that that's what the case is. If they were after people, China's the obvious choice. Yeah.
What do we know about the pilots? Anything?
That is another very strange thing. Very, very strange. I haven't picked up anything of substance on those two.
You would think they would say, you know, they've been with us for 20 years, whatever, nothing.
Right. That's another one of those, well, let's wait for a few days and see what happens, because if that continues to be the case, then, because my guess would be is they are trying to figure out, is there any possibility we can pin that on this thing on those two guys, or did they actually do it? You know, that type of thing. And so they're probably just trying to keep the intelligence people just trying to keep their head down until they've either made a political decision or a factual decision, and most likely a political decision will be made.
Do you think somebody flipped off the transponder?
Oh, yes, absolutely. That had to be deliberate. If it wasn't deliberate, that plane would have been scattered all over the ocean about a 1 hour's flight time north of Malaysia, and it wasn't. So you have to, that's as close to 100% as possible that that was a deliberate thing.
Why make the turn if this radar story is correct? Where are they going?
Now there's a wonderful question to which I don't have an answer, because the world opens up to you. If the Air Force General is right and the guy who confirmed him is right, they stayed at a fairly good altitude until they were approaching the coast of
Vietnam.
No, this was Malaysia. They were turning back to the west.
To that part. Okay.
Yeah. And they ended up dropping, according to the story, down to about 3,000 feet, which would mean they were probably going for getting down to ocean level, and which is very inefficient flying for those engines. But you can still go thousands of miles. That seems to be what they were trying to do. And so where were they going from there? Well, anything's possible. Iran's just up the road, so that's the easy shot.
Yeah.
But after that, who knows? You know.
Well, why would you take it down to 3,000 feet when you could stay up there at 35,000? They had a long way to go.
Well, because if you get down, they'd have to keep going lower than that to get under radar coverage, so that they couldn't be tracked. You're up high there. Everybody in the world's tracking you.
All right. So let's assume then. Because we're honing in on some of this. Somebody took over that plane, or the pilots did it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure there was an explosion on the plane.
No,
I
don't think there was.
They can't find it.
No.
So where do you think the plane might be? Speculation.
If I had to speculate, I'd say it's somewhere in Iran, that Iran had some reason to get a hold of somebody on that plane.
It landed.
And Iran's not going to do it. Just say, hey, look, we've got this, because then they're going to get blown out of the water. If, in fact, it had anything to do with Iran, there's somebody on that plane they really badly wanted. And that's just, speculation. But with that plane dropping down to low altitude, those are people that know what they're doing. They're not just going to go to 3,000 feet. They're going to go down, because 20 miles, line of sight is what radar does. And 20 miles, if you're low enough to that water, you get 20 miles from any radar, and it can no longer track you. Unless there's a weather inversion, which I doubt that there
was
that night.
Okay. All right. So nobody reports seeing a low-flying plane fly overhead.
Oh, yeah, there were. This was a news story that ran, that I picked it up this afternoon, in which it was attributed to civilians thought they saw a white body in the early morning hour, darkness at a low level coming across Malaysia.
They thought? I mean, you either see it or you don't, right?
Yeah, well, it must have been a part of the country where they're not used to seeing big planes at low altitudes. And so this was alleged to have been called into wherever somebody in Malaysia calls something into.
And they forgot to grab the cell phones from the passengers, and hence, maybe that story's correct, that family members called them, but these people were petrified to answer their phones, maybe.
Or they were collected, but not turned off.
But not turned off, or some of them weren't turned off.
Right.
That's a good point, too.
Right. My guess would be they were professional. These guys were professionals. But if they didn't then take the batteries out, then these things could ring away.
So if they have the plane, let's say it's in Iran or something, one of two things then. They wanted somebody off that plane,
mm-hmm.
or they want that plane. Now, if they want the plane, what are they going to use it for?
Spare parts. And so nobody's going to, no highly professional outfit is going to want to take a plane just for, because you can't go use it. So unless somebody sits there saying, boy, we really need some spare parts. Just doesn't make sense to me.
The kind of money Iran has, they probably could buy one.
You would think so. Yeah. So I think if, in fact, that is a fact rather than just wild speculation on our part as we're talking here, then it has to be there's somebody on that plane. It's conceivable that there's something that they thought they had to get a hold of that was down in the hold, because incredible stuff gets put in those holds.
And what about the passengers now? What will they do with them? Will they appear one day, or have they all been killed?
Well, I think you look at flight 007, you know, the 747 that the Soviets shot down, mm-hmm. there's no doubt in my mind that there were quite a number, probably the majority of that plane survived. And I believe from what little information we were able to gather is that the children were spread throughout the eastern part of the Soviet Union and orphanages and whatnot. What happened to the people? They were probably worked to death. But you can't do that if we're talking about Iran. So I don't, you know, you're either gonna, you have to kill them. You know, again,
it was, to keep it secret.
Yeah, there's just no other way to do it in this day and age.
Amazing story. Let's take some more calls. Scott is in San Diego. Welcome to the show. Go ahead, Scotty. You are on Coast to Coast.
Hi, George. The show normally for me is highly entertaining and always almost always informative. But some of the speculation tonight is just burning me. And I'll give you some context. I had a friend who was on the plane that hit the Pentagon on 9/11. And my hackles go up when I hear some of this stuff. And as far as the cell phones are concerned, I'll give you two scenarios. On a normal flight, they tell you to turn all that stuff off, the electronic stuff.
That's right.
All right. If there's an emergency, let's assume that there was some amount of time that the people, all bets are off, and they're going to turn on their phones. If you call a phone, that even one that survives an air crash, even regardless of the state of the phone, if you dial that number until the account is turned off, you're going to get a ringing signal.
No, so, that's not the case. If that phone is turned off, it should go straight to voicemail if it's not functioning. If it's still on, it's going to ring.
That's right. And that what I said was, in an emergency, you got to assume that some people are going to turn their phones off regardless of the rules. So either the plane and the phones are at a watery depth, or if it landed on land and crashed somewhere, those phones would still be operating, the ones that are on, and people would still get a ringing signal.
All right, but how do you explain, Scott, the apparent change of direction and course by this plane dropping down to possibly 3,000 feet?
Well, see, that's what we don't know. I guess the only thing that we know for sure is that it left an airport, it was due at an airport, and it never arrived.
And it that never arrived. That we know.
That we know, but you're right. There is some room for speculation. I'm just saying that some of the far-fetched speculation can be upsetting for some people.
Well, I understand. I understand that. But it's until we get some answers here, people are going to speculate like crazy. And I've got to tell you, James, you've been more informative, you and Jack Cashel last night, than anybody that I've heard around the country talking about this. And I don't know why governments haven't stepped up to the plate to say, folks, we think this thing was hijacked and taken, and we're going to find it. It's somewhere. You can't hide a plane like this.
If that happened, I cannot imagine any government stepping up to do it, because then they have to do something about it. So the whole foreign policy thing just dramatically changes. And that's a huge if that's what actually happened.
Yeah. I mean, we're not getting information about the, you know, people on the plane, the pilots, who they were. I mean, they're going through this motion of saying we're looking for debris, but we can't find anything. They should be telling us, you know, was there anybody on that plane that was of interest? And I don't think they're going to tell us, are they?
No. I think those are things that maybe back around the time of Flight 800 and prior to that, that type of thing would have leaked pretty readily. But in this day and age, I can't imagine that it would. First of all, the penalty for people, I mean, the Malaysians, they haven't played this game, you know, so, you know, I can see a Air Force general screwing up and going, oh, my God, okay. You know, but in terms of American or Chinese or, you know, any of those really highly professional outfits, the days are over when you'll get that kind of information fairly casually. It was so easy to get sources back in Flight 800. I had a source that was, I mean, rubbed shoulders professionally on a day-to-day basis with the head of the FBI. So I knew very early on that they were going to destroy me because that was what Louis Free and his people talked about.
I mean, I remember they went after you and your wife at the time, didn't they?
Right. If I wouldn't give them my sources, and I emphasize the multiple sources, then they promised to indict and imprison my wife. My lawyer was there when myself, my wife wasn't there, but and my lawyer were there, and that threat was made, and I guarantee you Louis Free was watching it because I could see we're up in New York at the federal building up there, and the TV monitor was, you could see it was on, a little red button somebody hadn't covered up, so you could see that it was being monitored. And there was a system-wide monitoring that had been written up in the paper. So we knew that they were watching it down in D.C. At the time that this dog and pony show was going on, where the Justice Department and three or four FBI agents were telling me, first of all, they said, okay, if you don't give us your sources, we're going to indict and imprison you, a retired police officer. You know, my attorney had to do all the talking. He told me to keep my mouth shut and just kind of look at him and whisper at him, and then he'd tell them. But he didn't need me telling him anything. He was really good. He gave a First Amendment speech like you wouldn't believe, and so they were kind of taken back by it. It was like a wave came over. What, First Amendment? What the hell are they talking about? You know, type thing. But then they regrouped, and they came back, and they said, literally, okay, tough guy, you don't give up this information. We're going to indict and imprison your wife.
Yep.
What a way to get to you, huh?
Yeah, and my lawyer, he goes, well, you don't have anything on her. And she says, that doesn't matter. We will.
Make your life miserable. Let's go to Mike in Buffalo, first-time caller. Go ahead, Mike.
Good morning, Ben. Great show. George, long-time listener, long-time fan.
Thank you, Michael.
My question is, you're welcome. My question is, what's the possibility or the probability of, let's say, in this plane is able to take off, if it is, in fact, still intact, and, say, go 300 or 3,000 feet above ground, getting to a designation, perhaps Israel, or if it's even possible to hit U.S., climbing to 35,000 feet or 40 feet and maybe detonating a nuclear device up there. What's the chances of that thing being able to do that, or would it be shot down before it hit any strategic point? And I'll ask the question and hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
Okay, what do you think of that, James?
I'll tell you, that is so far off into the area of extreme speculation. Obviously, anything's possible if some really extraordinary pros were doing it. You get through all these ifs, and they drop down to the ocean, and they fly somewhere. Who knows? It wouldn't be Israel, but if they fly somewhere, because I can't imagine it'd be Israel, and land, they have to get it undercover, and you know, if they've got a nuke, get it on there, get rid of the passers, you know, and fly. Sure, if all those things ended up being true, then of course they could. But that's in the tiny fraction of 1% possibility, you know.
All right, my friend. James, let's stay in touch. As I suspect, I'll be talking to you again this week.
Okay, right. Very good. Look forward to it.
All right, James Sanders, of course. And again, his book that you must read, The Downing of TWA Flight 800. Still one of the strangest stories I've ever heard, this Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. Up next, we talk with a physicist about quantum creativity on Coast to Coast AM.